what would you say if I said that I could bring them back?
I guess I'd say I never thought of that.
Well, alright, hold tight, you might wanna stand back, because one small John is coming intact.
St. John forward, spitting out some more words, fully intact, jacked, ready to rap and attack. Small John on your lawn, living like a gnome, hit you with my lyrics like a bullet to your dome.
The night when he comes up here, he's either gonna kill or he's gonna suck. But there's no in between for Mr. John Forward.
Well then, we're back. It's weird the fade out doesn't work on that thing. It just stopped altogether once I got to the bottom. This is the host of St. John Forward Radio. My name is John Forward. If you're detecting a hint of a different vibe, it's because this is for the first time ever that St. John Forward Radio is being recorded in the daylight. I've got a very special guest, that international comedy superstar that is not allowed to talk for another 10 minutes or so, but you guys should get excited for when he is allowed to talk. So we're doing a pre-record on Saturday. What is the date? June 3rd, as if you care. This is being aired out over the air on June 5th, but this is pre-recorded, but I want everybody to understand that this is going live to tape, so there will be no edits, so it's going to go out as if it was live. Even if, I don't know, something horrible happens, we're just going to put it out. If I die during this radio show, I'm going to ask my guest to put it out for me. And everyone's going to get to hear it no matter what on Monday. And then on Wednesday again on the internet. So this is the show. If you've been keeping up, you know I've been having a bit of a rough go at work. I've been trying to take it in stride because I've about had enough of the whole thing, and I feel like it's coming into a nice crescendo dive that I think is probably overdue. But I was trying to be okay with it and see what happens. But or I don't know. There was a couple of days this week where I had a bit of a spiral again. The anxiety just was kind of hitting me, just because even though it still could go in a way that I want it to go, just actually being at work day to day and just having to be a good boy and not give them any more reason to be mad at me, it just sucks being there knowing that, like, I'm working for people that are kind of being really skeevy and trying to kick me out the door without paying me what I deserve and trying to trick me into quitting. And, the more stuff comes up where I'm like, oh, that's something that they could have slotted me into instead of kicking me out the door. Or, oh, that job that I just found out after they hired somebody without advertising, that would have been perfect for me. I actually joined that committee just so that I could get a foot in the door if something like that ever came up. That's good. But no, I've been given the ultimatum. Take the bad shift that nobody else wants, or GTFO. And I've also I'd just been digging around in the computer systems. I ran some reports, and we have like three main metrics. Like, I work for a trucking company, so my fleet has, we're measured kind of on how many average miles per truck per week, and like what their fuel mileage is and their idle time, and two out of the three of those, I have the second best numbers in the company, and one of them, I'm number one with a bullet, so I know this isn't a competence issue, so it's hard not to take it personally when, like, I'm by no measurable measure I'm bad at my job. They don't like me, and it hurts my feelings a little bit. And, I don't know, I feel the same way in comedy, too, so I'm getting it from both ends of my life. Like, I'm also good at my comedy job, but that still doesn't seem to matter for a whole lot in some people's eyes. And I'm not saying, like, it doesn't matter whatever impact I've had on the St. John comedy scene, if I have. I'm a good comedian, and it just kind of sucks when people don't want me to be on their shows, because I know that it's not a competence issue. I know it's some petty personal thing, and it's a bummer, man. And the difference is that, you know, I still get to do other comedy. I can't just go start my own trucking company because I don't like how the one that I work for runs. I can create my own little small comedy empire, but for work thing, that's just kind of a paycheck, so I shouldn't take it as personally, but it, I don't know. But with comedy, I feel like it's different, because that's the thing that I love to do, and it's a bummer that I can't make a living doing the thing that I love. And in the society that we live in, like, for some reason, we've decided that the skills I have for sitting in front of a computer and tapping some keys, talking on the phone, making reports, running Excel spreadsheets, and just facilitating the process of moving a dollar out of one person's pocket into another, that stuff, they're like, let's pay John Forward the big bucks for that. But not for the thing that I love. There's nothing wrong with moving dollars from one pocket to another, but I don't know why that's considered more valuable than just pulling an idea out of thin air to create a great experience for a room full of people. That's frigging worthless, according to society. Maybe I'll throw $2 in the bucket because that guy enhanced my life just a little bit for those 10 minutes. But the worst part is, as far away from being like a professional comedian that can sustain myself on this, I've actually never been closer to it in my life, and that just makes it even more frustrating. Like, when I decided to do comedy in this city, there wasn't anything going on at all, but I wanted to do it anyway, so I just did it. And now, since then, St. John is it's a big part of the fabric of the culture in this city. I've got 2 of my own shows. I occasionally get to open for, like, actual professional comedians, like I'll be playing with K. Trevor Wilson at Chuckles at the end of June. I get to do shows in a nice, shiny ballroom in Fredericton and occasionally not bomb them. That's always fun. And now the big comedy franchise is here in town beyond our wildest dreams. And, you know, there isn't many opportunities in this country for success, but unfortunately that comedy franchise is the main one if you're going to make it at all, because they've got clubs all across the country, and if you get in with them, you're set. You can do shows here, 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 all coast to coast, all over the place. So there's all kinds of stuff going on in the city, all kinds of opportunities, but it's just outside my reach because a handful of people decided to put up barriers between me and those opportunities. And I don't know, I don't think anybody owes me anything. They get to profit off comics who get to use my stage to build the chops to do well on theirs, but that doesn't matter. I'm a good comedian, and I'm getting better all the time. And I get sad wondering how much better I'd be right now if I wasn't shut out to all these other extra shows. And that's the whole point. For their own reasons, these people decided that I don't like that guy, and if I don't let him do this show, it will probably make him a little sad, and that gives me joy in my black soul. And I don't know, I thought people in the comedy business were supposed to be trying to make people laugh, but they're just doing the same thing as the trucking company I work for, just moving dollars from one pocket to another. I don't think anybody who has any goal beyond making people laugh should be in comedy. They shouldn't be pooping up the thing that I love. And I don't take any joy in making other people sad. I just want to pull ideas out of the air and bring people a moment of joy as often as I can. And I don't like it when other people stop me from doing so. I'm here with my guest, the Reverend Brian Giles. How are you doing, buddy?
Oh, I'm great. I'm great.
Well, we're recording this because you're in town from a whole other country.
It's true.
Calais, Maine. So I'm making the special arrangements to record on the Saturday because you're kind of a big shot.
Yeah, well, yeah. I'm from Maine. It's a land of many teeth.
Yeah, so you're also a fine comedian yourself, and you're swept up in some of this nonsense, too, and I won't stand for it, Brian Giles.
Yeah. I don't know what to do about it either, my man.
We just have to be confident in the knowledge that we are the shiznit.
It's true.
And Snoop Doggy Dog has a little something to say about that.
That was the Dog Pound here right on W Balls 187.4 on your FM dial. You're tuned into the biggest balls of them all, DJ Saw, T-Nuts. Hey, don't forget about my homeboy Easy Dick in the Jackoff Hour. That's happening at 12 o'clock tonight. Right now, we got some new Snoop Doggy Dog for that ass. This one is called The Shiznit. You're about to go downtown, bitch, right here on the station that plays only platinum hits. That's 187.4 on your FM dial. If you're licking, that's W Balls.
Everybody's got to hear that shit on W Balls.
Hopping like a rabbit. When I take the Nina Ross, you know I got to have it. I lay back in the cut, retain myself. Think about the shit and I think it well. How can I mix my grip? And how should I make that nigga straight slip? Set trip, gotta get him for his grip as I dip around the corner. Now I'm on another mission, wishing upon a star. Snoop Doggy Dog with the caviar. In the back of the limo, no demo, this is the real. Breaking niggas down like he found a Holyfield. Cheer to the next episode. I make money and I really don't love hoes. Tell you the truth, I swoop in the coop. I used to sell loot, I used to shoot hoop, but now I make hits every single day with that nigga, the Diggy Dr. Dre. So lay back in the cut, motherfucker, before you get shot. It's 187 on a motherfucking cop. Boy, it's getting hot. Yes, indeed it is. Snoop Dogg is on the mic. I'm about as crazy as Biz. Marquee, Sparky, Chronic Bud real quick. And let me get into some fly gangster shit. Yeah, I lay back, stay back in the cut. Niggas try to play the D.O.G. like a mutt. I got a little message, don't try to see Snoop. I'm finna fuck the bitch, what's her name? It's Luke. You try to see me on the TV. Use a BG, D.O. double G. Yes, I'm a OG. You can't see my homie Dr. Dre. So what the fuck a nigga like you gotta say? Gotta take a trip to the MIA and serve your ass with the motherfucking AK. You can't see the Deagle double G, cause that be me. I'm serving, I'm swerving in the coupe. The Lexus, flexes from Long Beach to Texas. Sexist hoes, they wanna get with this, cause Snoop Dogg is the shit, biatch. Some with brain boggles, so I'll look to the microphone and slowly start to wobble. Grab it, have it, stick it to the plug. Get Snoop Doggy, I got a fat dub. Sack of the chronic in my back pocket blow. Need myself a lighter so I can't take a smoke. I toke every day, I loke every day with the P-O-U-N-D and my nigga Dr. Dre. Lay back in the cut like I told your ass. Give me the microphone and let me hit you with a blast. I got a little cousin by the name of Daz, and bitches who fuck him, give me the ass, cause they know about the shit that we be going through, and they know about the shit that I be putting up, and they be knowing about the shit I do when I'm on a mic, cause Snoop Dogg is Trump tight like a virgin. The surgeon is Dr. Drizzy, so Lizzy and Flizzy with D.O. double Jizzy, the fly human being singing, no I'm not European, being all I can, when I put the motherfucking mic in my hand, and you don't understand what I'm kicking, cause Snoop is on the mic and I get so wicked. Follow me, listen to me, cause I do you like you wanna be done. Snoop Doggy Dogg on the street, 2-1, dumb. Dee-dee-dum, here I come with the gat and the guitar was strum. Not that lunatic nigga who you thought I was. When I caught you slipping, I'ma catch you, then I'll pull your cap. Snap back, relax. You better not be slipping with them D's on that 83 Cadillac. So we gon' smoke an ounce to this. G's up, hoes down, while your motherfuckers bounce to this.
Doing the old fade out on the phone. That's going to bite me in the bottom later when I try to go play the next track and it doesn't work and I don't know why. I just turn the volume back up because what are we at for time, Reverend Giles?
Let's see. We are at... We're at 14 minutes.
All right. Not too bad. Now you're officially part of the show. How's it feel?
It feels great. I mean, I'm having a fantastic time. Your story was really sad. I worry about you now. Now I'm worried about you in the comedy world, in the trucking world. And
Well, I go up and down. That's kind of a distillation of, like, I had a couple of sad days at work this week, and that's kind of what I was going through. But we had a great show last night. It was a lot of fun. That cheered me up. I had to bring it down for the sake of the mood of the tale that I was spinning, but I'm in a good mood.
Good, Good. I'm happy to hear that. I just can't picture you bossing around a bunch of like greasy truckers.
I try not to be, you're a teacher too. You know, I don't like being an authority figure. I like to be a conduit or like a facilitator. Like I'm working together with those guys to make this happen. And sometimes I got to give them a hard time if they're being lazy or if they're taking like 4-day weekends every week and not beating the company quotas. And I tell them, like, even when I am giving them grief, like, this is what you signed up for. And it's my job to make sure that you do it. And that's what's expected of both of us. So we need to make it happen, buddy.
Do they ever tell you stories about like lot lizards?
I've heard a couple.
Yeah.
Yeah. One guy came in when I was working the night shift. He came in and told me just dreadfully boring story for like a half an hour straight. And I just did not care. And then at the end of it, he's talking about being at a truck stop and just some cracked out old lot lizard just comes in the shower with him and like propositions him like $50. I'm like, open with that part. Jeez, like I would have been so much more invested in the rest of your story if I knew where this was going.
Yeah, I knew it was going right to the lot lizards.
Yeah.
Yeah. I used to work at a truck stop when I was a kid. I worked as a busboy and a dishwasher when I was slash lot lizard, yeah. The truckers used to come in and tell me all kinds of crazy stories, man.
Like what?
My favorite were ghost stories. They tell me ghost stories. So Route 9 in Maine that goes, as soon as you cross the border into Calais and you go to Bangor, that's Route 9. Super haunted. Super haunted road. There's a point about halfway down called the Wilderness Lodge. And if you go by there, you can see there's like 20 crosses where people have just died in car accidents there. Also, the mob used to take body parts after they killed somebody like from Boston and whatever, and they drive up on Route 9 and they throw them on the side of the road. And a couple of years ago, some biologists were out there and they found the bones on the side of the road. Mm-hmm. So the truckers were telling me these stories about like parking at the Wilderness Lodge in the middle of the night. And like all the air would be sucked out of the cab of their truck and they couldn't breathe. And like the doors were all locked. They couldn't get the doors unlocked. And so they, beat their way out of the truck. Wake up in the middle of the night and hear someone screaming and pounding on the side of the truck, and they'd get up and they'd go checking around for where the ghostly scream was coming from, and there's nobody there. You know, they're all alone. And then the phantom hitchhiker, right? So they always, there's tons of stories on Route 9 about, seeing someone hitchhiking, they disappear, or
yeah.
They get in your truck and then they're gone, but the seatbelt is still buckled, that sort of thing.
And listeners, you can't just blame it on highway crank. I don't know how it is in the States, but in my they're randomly drug tested, so they're mm-hmm. not just doing whatever, and they can only work so many hours a day.
Yeah.
And yeah, there's a lot of crackdowns happening. There's a whole thing with the way that they log their work hours that's coming through, where it's a lot harder to like fudge it a little bit. Like if you need to, like within reason, like if you're stuck and you can't cross the border because you're like 5 minutes over your time for the day, and that means that you got to sit for a day and a half getting unpaid before you can go home to your family just because you're not legally allowed to drive anymore because you just were like a couple minutes short of this, or you got stuck in traffic or whatever.
That kind of
sucks. And the guys are paid by the miles, so they don't really. It's a constant fight anytime there's any kind of delay where they're not just moving down the road getting paid for every mile that they cover. And there's just they've got to fight every time to get paid for whatever happens. Whether sometimes it's their fault, sometimes it's not.
Man, that's imagine all the like the road construction they must run into, and that's got to eat up their time on the road. And terrible. I wouldn't want to be a trucker. It sounds like a terrible job to me. It sounds like an awful job. Yeah. Truckers all have that trucker gut because they can't like do. It's like you can do crunches while you're driving, right? So you're just sitting.
It's not the most active lifestyle, but there's all kinds of different. Like you'd be surprised at the variety of different types of people who are truck drivers. But it is definitely a certain type of person is built for that. Basically, they're just living in a tiny mobile apartment for like a week at a time and just living on the road and. They've got their desk up front with the steering wheel, and they've got their bunk bed in the back, and just they drive and they find somewhere to stop, and they take their 10 hours off, and I don't know what they do, watch a movie on their laptop or whatever, and go to sleep and wake up and start rolling again.
Wow. and then they take the showers and the truck stops and whatever.
Yeah, and it must be, like, it's good. We've got a lot of people that came from, like, Eastern Europe and stuff that are just making money to send back to their family. And it's kind of the perfect job for them because they just, the culture is just work and earn that living and support your family. But for the guys that have a family at home waiting for them to come home, if they get delayed and they're stuck out on the road, like, it's really hard to make plans to do anything because you're not sure when you're going to get home. And again, just having to fight for every dollar that they're trying to take out of you when you're not getting paid for actually rolling down the street.
Yeah.
It's just, I don't know.
This is a big shout out to the truckers out there. If you're listening, you know, God bless your hearts.
Yeah, I came into work one day and one of my guys came in and he's like, I heard you on the radio last night. You're a big celebrity. I'm like, well, yeah, it's a pretty big deal. I'm on the campus community radio station. English is not his first language, so I think he was just enjoying the sound of my voice. That's the best, well, and one of the only good parts of my job is talking to those guys. Sometimes they're annoying, and I've got to, like, fight with them a little bit. But on the whole, I enjoy just hearing from them and having conversations with people that I wouldn't be having conversations with otherwise.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, except for when I worked in the truck stop, I don't have a lot of conversation with truckers. I don't have there's not a big circle of my friends who are truckers. I might know one, maybe one or two personal truck drivers. Yeah.
Oh, they're good people, and sometimes they give me a hard time, but that's just because they're trying to. Sometimes if they give me a hard time, that's the difference between getting paid for this or that or not. So I don't, even if I'm annoyed in the moment, I don't blame them.
You're a very zen dude, John Ford. Like, you just never seem flustered by anything. Fluxed? Is that what flustered
you? Yeah.
You just always seem so, like, just even.
Well, I'm working on it. I've been going to therapy and yoga. I meditated today.
Awesome. Awesome.
You just have to, just because I'm constantly inundated with just nonsense that's very depressing sometimes. And you just got to find a way to shrug it off your shoulder.
Yeah, I punched.
Dust the shoulders off. I don't know. What's the Jay-Z quote that Obama made that time where he did this thing? I don't really know.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I punch things. I like to punch things when I'm, you know, I'm feeling stressed. I built a punching bag out of old tires. I put straps some old tires together out in the front yard, and I got my boxing gloves, and I go out there and I just hit them.
I used to be a violent child, but it's just not in me anymore. Like, I used to get in fights every single day. Like, at school, there'd be, like, two or three people that I would just get into fights with.
You're an angry ginger. That's why.
I evened out a lot when, I'm repeating a bit, but I mellowed out a lot when I, like, got sent off to Bible camp and found Jesus.
That's so weird, man.
Yeah. I lost the Jesus, but kept the peaceful part for the most part. But sometimes, you know, people know I get into fights on the internet. I'm trying to not to anymore, but it happens. I just spent the whole first 10 minutes of this show kind of mildly talking smack about some people.
Yeah.
I can't help myself.
Trolls, man. You know, when we were kids, there was no such thing as, like, a troll. That nobody could, you couldn't troll somebody. You just didn't walk down the hall and, like, disagree with somebody's opinion and get all vocal and mean. But now people spend all their time on the internet surfing through the Facebook posts looking for someone to just insult and disagree with and, like, shit on. I'll tell you, for a long time, people would come up to me and say, man, people are mean to you on your Facebook post. I mean, I would say, like, you know, the sky is blue today. Really beautiful day. And someone would say, well, yeah, but global warming, blah, blah, blah. And they have some negative opinion about whatever. Yeah. I was saying, my wife is really beautiful. Well, my wife is okay, too. I don't know why you got to talk about your wife. She's old. And I'm like, why are you arguing with me about these things?
Yeah, it's just like a contest. Like, yeah, well, I'm sadder or happier than you about something. Like,
right.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just, I try not to let it bother me as much anymore. It's just exhausting. It's much easier to just not care.
The politics now, too, in the U.S. With the Trump election have I literally, like, for a while, I was on the side of, I'm not a Trump supporter, so I was out there just putting out every anti-Trump meme that I saw, funny or not funny or
doing
or
the good work.
Yeah, trying to do the good work there. But then I realized that I was also, like, just a voice of negativity. And so I've really slacked back on that. Like, I feel like, mm-hmm. why are we fighting over this idiot, giving him any FaceTime at all? Like, he's not doing anything that really he's not doing anything intelligent, but he doesn't have a lot of power, really. He's just a figurehead.
Yeah, well, I think it's just it's a distraction, just worried about, like, I don't know. I think there's just something fundamentally wrong with the system that allows him to exist more than it's a problem with him particularly.
Agreed.
Like, I don't know. We shouldn't have that much stake put in something that depends on the right person for the job, because the right person might not exist. And we should be thinking about what happens if the wrong person has that job.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I definitely think he's the wrong person.
I think, like, as horrible as things are going, it's a little bit good that it's, like, at least there's, like, some pushback. Like, at least, like, judges will be like, no, you're not going to do that. Like, every now and then when he tries to pull something crazy.
Yeah.
But I don't know where it's going. It's
well, when he, like, this whole Paris Accord thing, when he pulled out of the Paris Accord, I mean, greenhouse, global warming is a thing. It's a real thing. We have statistics and data to prove that it's happening. So he's a climate change denier. And his whole argument about why we're pulling out of the Paris Accord was that, well, China's going to get to dig more mines, and they're going to have more coal burning, and India's going to have more coal burning too. And so if they can have coal burning, we should have more coal burning and more coal mining. So I just don't think it's fair that America has to take, I mean, can we burn coal too? Like, dude, I don't want, what do you mean? Like, what, burning coal is I mean, read some Charles Dickens, that cities were covered in soot, and it's a terrible fuel, source of fuel. Even if not for global climate change, it's a terrible source of fuel for your air quality and da da da. But he just doesn't get it.
Yeah, it's one thing to argue and debate about what to do about the problem, but it's a whole other thing to be like, yeah, that's no big deal. We don't need to do anything. Like, even if there's a small chance that maybe, like, doomsday's coming, maybe we should maybe make an effort.
Right, agreed.
I mean, what that looks like, you know, it's debatable, and a lot, and there is stuff on both sides. Like, some of the stuff that they probably want to do as an empty gesture towards making it look like you're doing something, maybe it's not useful for the cost that it incurs. Like, we can have that conversation, like, if this is what we're going to do, is it really worth it, and is it going to do the thing that we're saying it's going to do for real?
Right.
Or is it just going to, we're doing something for the sake of looking like we're doing something?
Yeah, I don't want to just pay lip service to it. I mean, it would be really nice to see people do something about it. But there it is, man. He's the guy in charge of that thing, and he was allowed to pull out. There's only, like, three countries that pulled out of the Paris Accord. There was like El Salvador and I think Kenya and the U.S. Like, come on. I don't think
it's at least countries. Like, okay, we're pulling out of this thing because of, like, X, Y, and Z. We don't like that one, but we're going to do this instead because this is a better plan. Then okay, fine. But I don't know. Just like, yeah, no, there's no problem. It's a conspiracy.
What's your opinion of the, I know we're talking American politics here. What's your opinion of the Kathy Griffith holding the severed head of Donald Trump?
I don't, like, I can see how, yeah, like, I don't care. She's a comedian. She's not, like, a very well respected comedian, like, as far, like, amongst our circle of people, but whatever. I think it's funny. I would have done it.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
And I really like the band Guar. They've been murdering presidents on stage for decades, and they put out a video of them holding up, like, a bloody Trump head and, like, accusing Kathy Griffin of stealing their bit. And then he's just like, hey, look at this. And he's pulling out all these other, like, he's got a rubber Obama head that's part of their stage thing, and they've got, like, George Bush and Bill Clinton, and they've been murdering people for years. And yeah. It's just, I don't think anybody's actually, do you think anyone's actually like, oh, that's out of line, that's encouraging violence? Like, that's what people say, but I don't know if anyone actually buys that.
Well, and the argument on the right is that, it hurt little Baron Trump's feelings, and that he's going to be scared that his daddy's going to be murdered. But listen, Ted Nugent was calling Kathy Griffith out and saying that she was, that it was cruel and it was awful and it was violent. This is the same guy who threatened to put a machine gun in Obama's mouth, right? And actually was questioned and detained by the Secret Service. And he's all of a sudden calling Kathy Griffith out, saying it's how inappropriate. Like, no, let's forget about Obama's kids and how they felt when Ted Nugent said that, right? Mm-hmm. And he's also, Ted Nugent's the same guy who puts out hunting videos where he kills animals inhumanely. Like, I'm a hunter. Yeah. I hunt, but he'll like, you know, put an arrow through a pig and like watch it squealing, running around for an hour on a video. And that's okay, but it's not okay to like make a joke about the president, having the president's head. I didn't see anything wrong with it. I thought it freedom of expression.
Yeah. And well, that's the thing. Like whether it's a good joke or a bad joke is worth talking about, but not like that's a bad joke isn't the same thing as like, oh my God, you can't do that.
Yeah.
Like just if you don't like it, then just don't respond to it. And
right.
Then, yeah. That's kind of how it works.
Scroll past it.
Yeah.
Move
it's
past
not
it.
Actually hurting anybody. And I don't think anybody believes that someone's going to see that picture. And all like all these little redhead little girls are going to grow up and they're like, I want to chop off the president's head.
Yeah.
It's just ridiculous. And a lot of it is just, oh, well, you guys were super upset when we were burning effigies of Obama. Then what are you doing? And it's just a back and forth of, like, out-hypocriting each other.
Right. It's the difference is when they were burning effigies of Obama, they usually were burning a cross and wearing white hoods at the same time that they were doing that, the Trump supporters. Just throwing that out there.
And for the record, I'm currently holding a bloody Justin Trudeau. I forgot the name of the guy. I'm holding a bloody Justin Trudeau head just as a satire.
Yeah. But he's got great hair still, even though you're holding
there's a lot to hold on to.
Yeah.
We're going to take a break and... I can't play a station ID because we're in the pre-record booth. So you are currently listening to Local 107.3 FM, your campus and community voice at the University of New Brunswick. I don't know. You know what you're listening to. This is St. John Forward Radio. You wanted to, I'm going to play a bomb track by Rage Against the Machine. You gave me kind of a vague anything by Rage Against the Machine. And I chose that song because I like it.
I love it.
Why, what do you have to say about Rage Against the Machine? Why is that your choice?
Well, I love Rage Against the Machine. I was actually specifically thinking of the song Testify, what I say, Rage Against the Machine, but Bomb Track's also an excellent
well, then
track.
You should have asked for Testify.
I should have been more specific. This is a problem my wife has with me, too. But Rage Against the Machine, as a band, was one of the first bands that I got into when I was a kid that I felt like had a strong political intelligent message in the rock world that I'd heard that I was exposed to. I know there were some before Black Flag and some of the early punk and Anthrax, but I love Rage Against the Machine. I love I'm a big supporter of Native rights and First Nation people's rights, and they're a Native band, and their political message is excellent, and plus I just love to work out to them. They just get me so pumped up, you know. I want to hit things, and I want to lift heavy things when I listen to them.
All right. Well, let's get pumped on St. John Forward Radio.
Let's do it.
Oh, it's not working. What's going on? I turned the volume back up. No, I didn't. I thought I did.
You said that was going to happen.
Here we go.
Hey, yo, it's just
And we're back on St. John Forward Radio. We're here with the Reverend Brian Giles, coming off last night, June 2nd. No Jokes Barred Deluxe. It was also the 30th anniversary of O'Leary's. You headlined last night's show.
Yeah.
How was your time last night?
I had a fantastic time last night. It was a great room. I mean, it's a small, intimate room. But it gives you that up close and personal feeling with each and every person. You can literally have a conversation with each and every person in the room. You can make eye contact with every single person when you're on stage, and it's also a great room because it's so relaxed. It's so free there. I'm not like sometimes when I used to do some of the professional clubs in Boston or Yuck Yucks or even Chuckle Stage, Shane's Stage. I feel like I really have to keep my game really tight, and if I fall out of those boundaries of tightness, if I have one beer too many and I get a little sloppy, or if I swear too much, or if I go under my time or over my time. I know last night I went under my time and I was like losing my mind apologizing to you. But at a No Jokes Barred stage, you can really play with your material. You can really have fun with the audience, and you don't have to be worried that you're not going to be welcome back on that stage again.
Yeah, like I would like if every person that performed on one of my show took it seriously and did their best, but I don't want to press people so much that they're afraid to experiment and do something that, you know, it might not go well, or it might be amazing. I'd rather swing between those two extremes and just have just blah middle.
Yeah. You've had some people on that stage that are like brand new, right? Like Arbar, like the people, yeah. That's been their first show. O'Leary's been their first show, right?
Well, O'Leary's is never anybody's first show.
Yeah.
But that's more of the Arbar is more, you'd call it an open mic show, technically. It's like we book it on Facebook, but O'Leary's is what you would call a showcase.
Yeah, it's a showcase. I get it. It's a weird structured little room though, right? With that like that open hole in the wall back there. Like people can sit down in the lower level and they can hear the show, but sometimes they can't exactly see the show.
Well, that's why I pull all the chairs and tables in the upstairs, because like we used to leave a couple of tables down there and people would just wander in and they'd be sitting at a table having a conversation just because it's less crowded than downstairs. And maybe it would be better if we could pack both rooms, but I'm doing pretty well if we just pack the upper half. And there's been a few times where we've done it and that's been packed and the overflow kind of goes into the downstairs. But I like to force people to be right upstairs, because if there is only 20 people, that 20 people feels like 100 if they're sitting in the right place in that room, just because you're right on top of them. But if you've got 20 people that are spread out and you can't see some of them because they're behind like a thing and they can't see your face, it's just, I don't know.
Yeah,
but I think that show has like the R-Bar's got pretty consistent attendance. I don't like that's and it goes up and down. Sometimes it's packed to the gills in there, and sometimes there's only a few people. But the O'Leary's one I think has more room for growth. Like we could pack that place out, and I put on a really good show there. And I think that's more palatable to maybe like a casual person who's only been to Yuck Yucks. I think like the O'Leary's show is probably an easier step than diving right into going to the R-Bar from there.
Right, the R-Bar. You know, I love the R-Bar. I've never been a witness to any of the violence and overdoses and all the stuff that happens at those shows. And I feel a little, this is going to sound really crazy, but I feel a little sad that I've never seen the R-Bar erupt into its classic R-Bar mode.
Are you going to come up on the 17th for the 3-year anniversary? I don't have you booked on the show, but there's going to be, like, I'm taking over for the after party afterwards. We're going right till 2, so I'm going to be, like, the karaoke host.
Whoa.
And people can submit in. They can write on the little pieces of paper either a song, or you could say, Brian Giles, 5 minutes of stand-up comedy, and just have a mix. We'll see how that goes.
That would be
of the regular show until 11, but afterwards, like, full-on show up and write your name on a piece of paper, karaoke/comedy open mic until 2.
Are you nervous about people wandering in there? Like, till 2 o'clock in the morning at the R-Bar, that sounds scary to me.
Well, that's going to be great. Yeah. I'm looking forward to it.
You are an animal, sir. You are an animal. And you'll do the whole thing with that zen-like patience. When somebody goes in and stabs you, you'll just be like, you shouldn't have stabbed me right there. I didn't like that. I didn't like that at all.
I want to be mad at you, but this is going to make a really great story someday, so it's okay.
If I don't bleed out, this is going to be, I need a new t-shirt.
Yeah. So how about last night? We had Molly B made her debut hosting. That was her O'Leary's debut. She did the R-Bar once. She's my favorite of the local comedy coven.
Yeah.
One of the Fredericton ladies. She's and Sam Laidman did a great job last night too.
I think Sam Laidman, I said it to him last night, I think he's a better writer than I am. I have a persona. I get out there, I'm enthusiastic, I like to yell, I like to jump up and down, I like to make people happy. But Sam Laidman is a great writer. Like, his jokes are really well written. And he's got that dry, like Stephen Wright-esque sort of presentation. Mm-hmm. In a couple of years he's gonna be a force to be reckoned with. Dan McCarthy, watch out. Matt Keenan, watch out. Okay, you boys. Sam Laidman is gonna get you.
He's never gonna catch up to us though. We're like comedy legends.
Yeah, well, we're old dogs. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
We've
been in the game for so long. Well, you've been in it for what? How long have you been doing comedy? You've been doing it longer than I have.
So my first gig ever, I'm gonna be 40 in a month. My first gig ever, I was 17 years old.
Yeah.
I did a college gig for a crowd of 500, and I got pulled off the stage because I was too offensive. And then I used to just mess around at parties and do it once in a while. And then I officially got into comedy professionally when I was 21 years old, and started doing the Boston comedy scene and the Portland, Maine comedy scene. And then, I worked on it till I was 27, 28, something like that. And then I took some time off. I took like 6 or 7 years off from comedy and got back into it here a couple of years ago. But so, you know, almost 20 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, well, and Molly B is kind of going into semi-retirement. We were talking about that last night. That's disappointing.
Yeah, I try to talk her out of it. You know, we need more females in the comedy scene. I feel like, and I don't just mean this for our local scene, but I think in the whole comedy world, I think there's not enough of a female voice on stage. And sometimes when I was saying this to Molly last night too, like sometimes you see women on stage and the ones that get noticed and rise through the ranks of comedy get noticed and rise through the ranks of comedy because they're doing male oriented, you know, yeah, comedy. And I'd like to see some female comedy about female stuff and see, you know, and so they speak to their own demographic, you know?
Yeah. Well, not just female. I'd just like to see a variety of different points of view. And a lot of women do have a different point of view. So that's, I just like having a mix of different styles and like a female energy is kind of can be its own thing. So there's sometimes a female comic is just doing the same set that a man could do, like with like a slightly skewed perspective, but still very traditional comedy, I guess, in the broad sense of the word. But like, I really liked Maria Bamford's last special, and she's a very unique person, and I like what she does. Kind of, I like her jokes and her writing and her delivery too, but I like her, like her special is really interesting, and it cuts between do you know her at all?
I've never seen her. No,
she's got a couple of specials on Netflix and a show called Lady Dynamite, but her newest special, it starts out with her, she starts like her hour talking to herself in the mirror, like practicing, and then she does like a few minutes to like three people on a park bench, and then it's like people on in a bigger bench, and then like a laundromat and a bowling alley and a small theater and a big theater, and it's just like one, it's the same material. Like she could have just put out the video of the big theater show at the end, but I thought it was really cool that it kind of flowed and it just cut as the hour progressed. It just went through these different venues.
Wow. You know, I find a big venue easier to perform in than a small venue. Any day of the week, a small venue, like an intimate venue, you can see everyone. Like I said, with the O'Leary's room, you can see every eye in the place. You can make eye contact with them, and it almost ups the ante a little bit. Yeah, it's intimate. But in a big room, you can just run your material. Mm-hmm. I mean, they call it a routine for a reason, right? You just run a routine on the room, and then they all respond, and the laughter is contagious. So even
there's just that many more possibility of people that you can hit to get a laugh, which might trick someone else into laughing too, just because they heard the first laugh and it builds.
Yeah, yeah, and just people laughing is contagious for sure. Yeah.
But like, if you have the wrong 20 people and none of them like you, that's just silence. But like, if you're in a room of a couple of hundred, if like 5% of them laugh, then that can you want more than that, obviously. Ooh, yeah, I don't know.
That'd be almost more
sometimes
awkward.
Like, especially, well, if you have like an awkward material like some of mine, sometimes people aren't sure if they should be laughing or not until that first person cracks out, and then it's kind of like, okay, it's okay to laugh about this even though it's super dark.
But yeah, I would. Steve Fudge and I this morning were watching Louis C.K.'s monologue from Saturday Night Live. I hadn't seen it before.
And the one about pedophiles.
Yeah, and it was super funny, but it was so awkward. But the whole time I'm thinking, should he be saying this? And at the end of the bit, he says, "Oh, we got through it, right? Like we already got through it together."
Yeah, well, that's what we should be doing. We should be saying the things that, as comedians, it's our job to say the thing that normal people would be like, yeah, I probably should keep my mouth shut. And we say it, and we show everybody that, like, see, that wasn't so bad. We just said, it's just words.
Yeah, just words.
We got through it.
Yeah. You guys had that big controversy with that comedian who got sued for making a joke about a kid with a disorder singing to the Pope or something, right?
Yeah, it was a French guy. I didn't really know him until this came out, but he made a joke. There's some like disabled kid that is like a famous Quebec celebrity sick kid or something, and he made a joke like all these years later, like, when's that kid gonna die? We all donated his money. And it was the same fake outrage as the Kathy Griffin thing. Just like, oh, this joke contributed to him being bullied at school. Like everybody at school was super nice to this kid who, there's probably no nice way to say this, but he looked like a dying kid that was having fundraisers. And if anybody was bullying him, they were probably already doing it. It's not like, hey, I heard Mike Ward say this joke last night, and like, so we're gonna be extra mean to you. We're like, that's not how kids work.
And how old was this kid and that these other kids would have seen this material in the first place, right?
I think it's probably the people that wanted an excuse to be outraged about it are probably the same people that led to this kid. Even like, if nobody said anything, this kid probably wouldn't even have known that that joke was made.
I agree. I think when people are celebrities and they it's almost like, if you or I did that joke, right, nobody's going to try to sue us because we're not making any money off our comedy. They don't care. But as soon as you reach a certain degree of celebrity, people want to find a reason to sue you. Yeah. Like, I don't know if you know, Jim Carrey is being held accountable for his girlfriend's suicide. Did you know that?
No.
Yeah, his girlfriend, his off and on girlfriend had committed suicide. And
did he buy her the razor blades or something?
Nothing. Apparently he just wasn't caring enough in his text message when she was text messaging him. He didn't say go kill yourself or anything like that. He just didn't respond appropriately.
So he's probably already feeling like a bag of turds already.
Yeah.
Yeah, his girlfriend just died. Leave him alone.
Right. So her parents are going to try to sue him now as a part of a wrongful death suit or whatever. Like,
he should sue them for not raising her to be able to cope with whatever. That's an ignorant thing for me to say. I'm just going to stop saying it.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know what the situation is, but let's take a quick break, and then we'll play a song, and then we'll come back and close this mother out. Let's hear some Blue Boss by Sampa the Great on St. John Forward Radio.
I love it.
Can you get a bit higher? It just blasted.
Got up exactly in the AM. Probably the hunger had struck me. The push to stay alive is upon me. When I wash the pain. Sorry that my work's in vain. The license to be an idle life sometime and force change. I understand and I bleed. Bleed even if there is no blood. My family washing out my tears. The water thinner than blood. And I ain't talked to them in years. For them I shed my blood. And now they shut me in the street. I thought that we were blood. It's not enough. Walk my fingers to the bone, landlord. It's not enough. This mic I'm spitting on in my fridge is not enough. I'm an artist, this I know. Industry is not enough. And when the world stop treating people like they think we ain't enough. Sweep life under a rug, my G. Flawless when all eyes were watching. God, I awoke, my G. Honest, then I ordered a revolt and we saw, my G. Honest, we listened to our hearts, change what we're gritting on it. Mama said, he's a herd, girl, you stuck up in the clouds. Well, I think we fly high, cause we stuck up in the clouds. We no longer in this world, cause we stuck up in the clouds. All we do is blow trees when you stuck up in the clouds. Till you're dead, and she itching for a fixin' for her life. Crack it and go ahead and try to tell me we ain't living in two different worlds, my. It's time for you to see that this is democracy. If the rich are getting richer, boy, how poor we gonna be? Oh, how dumb we gonna be? Freedom is the land of thee. Under your breath for free, my. Sweep life under a rug, my G. Flawless. No eyes were watching, God, I awoke, my G. Honest, and I ordered a reward and we saw, my G. Honest, listen to our hearts and change what they written on it. Mama said, eat your head, girl, you stuck up in the clouds. Well, I think we blind high, cause we stuck up in the clouds. We no longer in this world, cause we stuck up in the clouds. All we do is blow trees when you stuck up in the clouds. Dang. See that? Dang. Time freedom. You see that? Whenever I have headphones like this on, I always feel like doing this.
he's mock record scratching for the record. So that was Sampa the Great. We're here at with Brian Giles. We've got about like 5 more minutes left in the show, and then we'll fade out, and I'll cut it off for how long it's supposed to be. So, international comedy superstar Brian Giles, you're talking about you've done some shows like in Boston, around Maine. You seem to be doing more shows in Canada lately. Is there nothing going on in New England now, or
for me? So I homestead, right? We know that because from the jokes, and I live outside of Calais, Maine. And really, for me, it's a matter of ease of access to the clubs. It only takes me an hour and a half or so to get to St. John. It only takes me about 2 hours to get to Fredericton. There's nothing happening in Bangor at all, which is the closest city to my south.
Yeah.
And then the next nearest city where there is some comedy is Portland, Maine. And it's just a 4-hour drive, you know? So I'm just not making the 4-hour drive with a wife and kid. I mean, at this point in the comedy game, I'm not committed enough to the premise that I'm going to get famous, that I'm going to sacrifice my time with my family to go out chase those gigs. Because, I mean, there are comics who spend, you know, weeks and weeks on the road and all over the place. And
that's why I don't feel the incentive to chase it, because there's people that are like super great comedians that I really like that are still just seem to be scraping by, and like, ugh, if that's the best case scenario, I don't know if it's worth it.
Yeah, I mean, you come to St. John to do a weekend gig and you make $1,000, great, but you get, you know, you've only got 10 of those gigs a year or something.
I mean
that's terrible, you know, that's not no kind of life.
Yeah, and society is just like, you and I are gifted artists, but society doesn't place a lot of value on that.
No, we can't throw a football, so we can't hit the hockey puck, so
and that's our fault for not. And even when we can get even the people that are fans of it, it doesn't really get the same amount of respect, I think, because we're basically talking into microphones, and on some level everybody's like, I can do that.
They think they can.
Yeah.
Until they try it.
Right. So how does what's going on in like New Brunswick and St. John in particular, how does that compare to other things that you've seen, keeping it short because we're running low on time?
I think the St. John scene, and I've said this before, reminds me of the Portland scene back when I first started doing comedy there. There was one main club, the Comedy Connection, and there was like no outside rooms. We try to throw together a bar here or there.
Yeah.
And the Comedy Connection is like New England's version of Yuck Yucks, right? There's a chain of them. There's one in Boston or whatever. And then we started to branch out and do our own rooms, and it became like a hole that I was blacklisted from the Comedy Connection back in the day, right? Because I didn't even have the outside room. My buddy had the outside room, and I just came to perform at his show, and so they blacklisted me from coming to the Comedy Connection for a long time, and that was a real bummer. I was pretty upset about that because it was the only professional room, right? And that's where I worked with and met a ton of great Boston comics, Tony V and Kevin Knox and Jimmy Dunn and Justin McKinney and all these guys who are now famous. They're like on movies and television and stuff. But the St. John scene is really, I think it's growing. I think it's great. And I'm hoping that the Yuck Yucks will start to open up its floodgates a little bit and let these guys who are working your stages come up there and perform, because you really are building, you, John Ford, are building a crop of comedians that they should be able to readily pull from.
Yeah, it's getting better than it was. It's unfortunate that I've had to be the first round of casualties and everyone else can just climb over my corpse and get to it, but that's fine.
Yeah.
Do you have any upcoming stuff you want to plug? They're not going to hear about tonight's show, so we don't need to mention that.
Let's see.
This comes out on Monday on the radio and then Wednesday on the internet.
I'm at a bunch of places over the summer. I can't remember them all off the top of my head. Right, I think
while you're looking, let me squeeze mine in, and then we can close on your plugs.
Okay.
I'm not on the show, but this weekend on June 10th at the R Bar, Ken Bolton's comedy class is graduating. So there's 8 brand new comics doing their first show. So check that out on Sunday the 11th. Sunday afternoons, there's going to be a one-liner battle between Matt Keane and Dan McCarthy. I'll also be on that show. June 17th, R Bar, No Jokes Barred, 3-year anniversary. We talked about it before. Comedy show until 11. It's going to be solid. And then 11 to 2, comedy and / karaoke open mic for the rest of the night. No Jokes Barred is a Facebook group, johnforward.com. What do you got, Rev?
All right, I got, so July 15th, I'll be in Calais, Maine, doing a Lions Benefit show. July 15th, Calais, Maine, Lions Benefit show. I'm doing the Hampton Golf Course.
That's Matt Keenan's show.
Matt Keenan's show, yeah. And that's Wednesday, the 26th of July. I'm doing that. And then I'm at Yuck Yucks the 3rd, 4th, and 5th of August. And I haven't yet to book any shows with... I'm supposed to be going to the Wilser's Room and doing the open mic there, I guess, in July as well. And then hopefully John Ford will put me on some more of his shows in July. Because I love him, and I can't do much for him, but he can do tons for me, so...
We'll see. Okay, we'll talk.
And you can check me out at the Reverend Brian Joseph Giles on Facebook, or you can check me out on Reverb Nation.
All right. Well, this has been St. John Forward Radio every Monday, local FM, or find back episodes on johnforward.com. ¶¶